Back in December, a headline caught our eye, which most definitely was worthy of discussion, calling it to your attention from MedPage Today. It said, falls and car accidents cause most injuries in U.S. children. Well, knowing that many falls and injuries from car accidents are preventable, we called a long time ago guest and asked him to join us this morning. Dr. Richard Cantor, Associate Professor of Emergency Medicine from SUNY Upstate, joins us in the studio this morning. Good morning. Welcome back, Dr. Cantor.
It's good to be here.
And listeners, I'm going to give you a warning. He's grumpy. He's had a tough night in the ER watching children come in, because it's mostly children you deal with, isn't it?
Only children.
And it's been a rough night due to what I think we could probably call, in many cases, the stupidity of parents. Is that saying too much?
Well, there's a fine line between making a bad choice and making a really bad choice. And I think there's none of us as parents who haven't regretted some of the decisions we've made. That being said, in my line of work, I only see the bad outcomes of things, but it's been somewhat educational over the years.
To watch the kinds of decisions that are being made. Well, let me give some statistics here. According to the CDC's National Center for Injury Prevention and Control, 9.2 million American kids suffered from unintentional injuries each year, and 12,175 of them die. Those numbers are absolutely staggering.
They're staggering, especially in the face of the fact that we've identified the high-risk kind of behaviors that can lead to accidents that are also non-fatal but disabling or debilitating. There's a certain pattern to our lives in everyday living, and that applies to the injuries we see in the emergency department. They vary with the seasons, and they vary with the times of day, but it's sadly predictable that in my level of experience, I can sort of get a rhythm to when these kids are going to come in with what kind of injuries.
And that's really scary. And I want to say that we're giving statistics, but I see these conversations as, all right, that's statistics. But when we're talking about your child or your friend's child or your child's friend, it hits home, doesn't it? And we're talking about real parents making real decisions and real bad decisions in a lot of cases.
Sadly, as I said, I catch the bad endings of things. But that being said, I've had my own children. I had to raise my own children. And it's every parent's responsibility not only to protect their child, but to educate themselves on the minor moves they can make that can keep their kids safe.
Because sometimes it really is just a simple thing that they need to do to protect their children.
Absolutely.
You said that you see certain kinds of things at certain times of day. Give us an example of that.
We're taping at 9 a.m. in the morning. At this point in time, there are a billion people making cups of coffee in their kitchens for breakfast. They're having a harmless moment. They're turning around to cook breakfast for their kids. The two-year-old walks in the kitchen. The table is carrying the coffee cup at the child's height. The child's curious, reaches up, pulls the cup down, and we have first and second degree burns on the face and shoulder.
Ugh.
At the same time, many, many children like to help their parents cook.
Sure.
And that's a great thing. But unsupervised, they play with microwaves and can turn on stoves and can be burned horribly in those situations. One of the biggest mistakes parents make, and myself included, is underestimating the coordinated motor skills of their child. My child will never climb on that. My child can't reach that. My child could never find their way into that crevice. Without question, kids are faster, quicker, and smarter than we are or we think they are.
And therefore, what do we do to prevent those kinds of things? If you can predict them, if you know they're out there, if you think it wouldn't happen to your child, how can you make sure it won't happen to your child?
One of the easiest things to do in your home, this comes from my job as the poison center director, is if just put yourself at the height of a two-year-old and walk around your house and see what they can reach and what they can get into under your cabinet in the kitchen. You have a ton of cleaning materials, and they are ready, willing, and available for the child to be
to swallow,
ingesting them.
Sure.
And many of them burn throats and burn skin and hurt eyes. In the good weather months, I know when the gardening starts and the cars are getting cleaned and people are using insecticides, or in the winter with antifreeze, that garages can be very threatening for the health of a child. Those liquids are sweet to taste at different intervals. A lot of people take the big 5-gallon whatever they buy and put them in Coke bottles for ease of distribution. Little boy or little girl's going to walk in the garage and appropriately drink the Coke.
Sure, because that's what they think it is.
And I don't want to dwell on poisonings, but the reality is a sip or two of antifreeze or windshield washer fluid can be fatal for a child because it's such a concentrated
sure,
poison.
Sure. And then what about things like, these are the kinds of things that get me. I hear about a child who, maybe a 10-year-old who was on a vehicle, an ATV, that the parent just bought that child for their birthday, and now they've, gone across a field and flown off the... It just amazes me that parents even bought them, and then these kids aren't even wearing helmets.
The first part of that is very sad, because it's contrary behavior. We love our kids. We want our kids to be extraordinarily protected and happy.
And we want them to love us. And I think that's where some of these dumb decisions come from, is because we think they'll love us if we buy them these things.
Maybe you should talk to my kids. But the reality is we like to make our kids happy. One of the beautiful things in life is the smile of a child or a teen. Mm-hmm. But it astonishes me that people are buying 10-year-olds motorbikes, that people are throwing 12-year-olds on all-terrain vehicles. All-terrain vehicles, to my mind, are death traps.
Yes.
They are meant to be driven quickly in a dangerous mode in an uncontrolled environment, and national statistics are not only representative of the fact that you get hurt by them, fatalities are highest on ATVs. So this rough-and-tumble lifestyle is just that. It will have a bad outcome. Same thing with motorbikes. I often take parents in the emergency department on tours to look at some of the kids who've been injured, not in person, but to talk to them on site to try and reinforce that the helmeted child has minor bruises,
yep,
and maybe a cut on the lip, and the unhelmeted child has a much, much higher profile.
And so maybe helmets are one of those simple decisions, quote unquote, that parents could make instantly, even if their kids fight them. It's love to make sure that they wear them. You know, we don't have much more time, but I think the real point here is that these simple decisions could really be saving lives.
Let me give you some quick moves that will give you dramatic returns. Helmeted bike riders, appropriately safety belted children in vehicles.
In car seats.
God bless car seats. Supervise children in the dusk hours in the warm weather as they're out playing by the appropriate age supervisor, locking all toxins, locking the garage, and as an aside, just applying the worst outcome before you make a decision when you buy something that's an excitement-generated toy or tool.
Assume the worst to protect
your
child.
Trust me, they're smarter, quicker than us.
Dr. Richard Cantor, thank you so much for coming by this morning. I hope you get some sleep.
Not a problem.
Hi, I'm psychologist Dr. Rich O'Neill with this week's checkup from the neck up. Keeping New Year's resolutions or excuses versus flexibility. You make the call, but how? Well, dear listeners, if you've been tuning in to checkup from the neck up the last few weeks, and slimy shame on you if you haven't, you despicable excuse for a human being. But if you did, you know that 45% of us who make a New Year's resolution succeed after 6 months. However, on the way to success, we might not know when it's a good idea to backpedal from our goals a bit. And, for example, take some puffs on a cigarette, or eat a big bowl of Chunky Monkey with cookies, or heading to the gym, turn around for an extended workout with the remote instead. Take me, for instance. If you listened last week, you know that to organize 25 years of collected mess, I vowed to sort and toss 10 office folders every workday. Or, at the very least, on a tight day, 10 pieces of paper. But you know what happened? A mere 7 workdays after my vow, I'm eyeball deep in a week beyond tight, beyond Ouija tight, with everything squished into Monday, Tuesday, and Friday because I'm to be at the airport Wednesday at 5 a.m. flying out to a 2-day meeting. So, late and tired Tuesday night, I'm blasting out a few gotta-get-them-done-before-I-go emails, and I see that big number 10 on the sticky note on my computer monitor for the 50th time that day, reminding me of my daily goal, and not one sheet done yet. Now, no snorting laughter, you one-up lazy lout. So how to make this call? Gut it out, stay later to do 10 and have less R&R with my family, or give the resolution a rest? How to tell the difference between excuse and flexibility, laziness and leeway, wimping out and wisdom? My answer? Put that immediate decision in the long view of 6-ish months and ask, what choice now would most likely help me reach my ultimate goal then? And put it in the broad view and ask, what's the best fit for all my goals across my whole life? And don't make a big deal out of it, because as some wise man said, life is just a relentless series of failures, begging for a do-over. And skip insulting yourself, you big dope. It doesn't help. Instead, while you ponder, give yourself some musical accompaniment with your tuneful try on our New Year's resolution theme song. Can't remember it, stupid? Well, we just happen to have Dr. Neckup and the Checkup Crooners here for a melodic reminder. A one, a two, a three. See how we bail, Gail.
Make a new plan, Stan.
Put it in place, Grace.
Check how it go, Joe.
If there ain't no prize, guys.
Do it all over, Rover.
I'm Dr. Rich, the Don Rickles O'Neill. Thanks for listening.